Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsession
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, FamilyPetAncestry.com, for no particular reason except for I thought it was funny. Anyway, the credits. Mike Rickberg composed and sang that song you just heard. He's going to sing his lyrics to the Mexican Hat Dance at the end of this program. Vilmos fixes my website, and Patrick Brady is going to make the audio sound better than how I'm recording it. So I appreciate all of their good works. Let's see. It is March, and so this week I am doing Montreal. So if you are in Montreal, come and see me do comedy at the Comedy Nest. And then I'm back in Los Angeles doing a dirty bookstore called The Pleasure Chest. And you can find that at Jackie Cation, my Twitter feed and Instagram and all that. It has a pretty good list of where I'm playing. And then I'm doing the Irvine Improv and the Phoenix Improv with Maria Bamford. And then I'm back in LA doing a little dive bar in Atwater Village called Bigfoot Lodge. So that's stand-up comedy this week. JackieCation.com has all my calendar into the future. So if you want to find out where I'm playing, if you want to watch me do stand-up comedy, because the Dork Forest is not stand-up comedy, it's a chitter chat show. So you could do that on JackieCation.com. You can buy things if you like Dork Forest, the idea of a Dork Forest t-shirt, a Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirt, or one of my stand-up albums, CDs, or a stand-up t-shirt. You can get it all at the merch page on JackieCation.com. There is a donation button on both Dork Forest and JackieCation.com. I would love it if everyone gave me $100 a year. Yeah. If you don't have $100 a year, I get it. If you want to give me $10 a month for 10 months, I don't make it easy for you, but it's a way to break it up. And, but if you don't have money or whatever, but you enjoy the show and you talk it up, I appreciate that too. Plus, there's an Amazon banner on JackieCation.com where you just press the white banner on the right-hand side of the page, and it takes you to Amazon. You order like normal, and the Dork Forest gets a little bit of a kickback, and I appreciate that a fair amount. So you could do that as a support thing. And then other than that, I think there's probably something. Who knows what? AllThingsComedy.com is my umbrella podcast thing that I'm doing. You could find other podcasts at allthingscomedy.com, and that'd be fun for you if you're always looking for other podcasts. Plus, I'm doing a podcast just about stand-up comedy with Lori Kilmartin over at nerdist.com. So if you look up the Jackie and Lori show on iTunes, you could listen to that, me and Lori talking about comedy for an hour. Other than that, feel free to email me if you have any questions or problems, jackie@jackiecation.com. Review the show on iTunes, and let's get into it. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. I'm back in my living room here in Van Nuys. It's very exciting. And I am sitting with TJ Chambers, stand-up comic at TJ Chambers, plural, LA. So at TJ, welcome to the show, TJ.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, it's good to be here. And I feel like you almost can't say Van Nuys without saying sunny Van Nuys before it. So it's good to be here in sunny Van Nuys.
I like the idea of it being sunny Van Nuys because the whole place is sunny.
I mean, on one hand, it generally is, but also it's nice to just add that descriptor so you're not sort of like Van Nuys, you know?
Right, right. Just, well, it's what Andy and I walked to breakfast yesterday, and we walked by this neighbor right off of Sepulveda. There were a lot of used condoms.
Yes.
And I was like, what's going on? And he said, I said, well, so people, nobody keeps their condom in their car when they're done using it? And he goes, no one keeps their condom in their car when they're done using it.
Yeah, it's not like, yeah, the Van Nuys auto dealership doesn't, like, as an amenity, they don't throw in, like, a condom dispenser at you.
You know, in your car, you
those
put
those things where you deposit a used needle when it's done. They need those probably just on the streets of Van Nuys.
And I was like, so at least they're using condoms, the people in love. And he was like, not people in love, Jackie.
Not people in love, yeah. I like that.
This is my go-to.
Yeah. Yes. For a minute you were with it, but then the naive spin came on. No matter what, like the Midwesternness came out one way or the other.
Well, there's a high school right by here. And I was like, maybe high school. And he's like, no, remember when you walked to the coffee shop and there's prostitutes? And I was like, that's right. And I was like, so do they have, and just, it got even,
right.
I said, so do they have cars they bring them to? And he's like,
Johns pick them up. They drive them somewhere walkable back to work.
It's literally the oldest profession. It's been happening this way. Used to be a carriage. Now it's in a car, but yep. Pick them up, drive them around a little bit.
And so it's like, and they drive them like somewhere walkable back to work.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, and then they do it, and then they're done, and then they throw a condom on. I was like, that sounds like the saddest job ever. And he's like, thank God you finally realized it.
Yeah, right.
So in other news.
Yeah, Sonny Van Nuys.
Sonny Van Nuys. Mm-hmm. So here we are at the Dork Forest, and you have many dorkdoms. You are a diamond with many facets.
As the Dork Venn diagram goes, I'm happy to have a number of circles. Yeah,
you're on board. So, I mean, and your lady friend is, she was on the show doing the cosplay, right?
Yes, indeed. Brittany Braun. Not that it needs to be specified, but platonic lady friend.
Oh, platonic,
just in case anybody's listening to this and loving my voice.
And looking for some TJ Chambers.
Or probably more accurately, in case anyone looked at Brittany's and saw
and
her
cosplay. And was also looking for some love.
I don't want to turn her options off.
Right.
But yeah, very good friend of mine. We do a lot of the conventions and cons and stuff.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, okay. And then you've gamed with Andy.
I have indeed,
with Andy Ashcraft. And then here you are to talk about something that I've always wanted to be good at, but I'm not any good at and barely know how to play, which is chess.
Yeah.
All right. So so when did you start playing chess?
I mean, I played always as a kid. I think my dad taught me, I think, wanting me to sort of force me down an intellectual path.
Right.
Like, I'm going to turn you into a smart kid or whatever.
Right.
So I was new.
And he played chess?
I think my dad is sort of like a false intellectual. So I think he knew the moves and played in as much as like,
right,
this is what gentlemen do. They sit down over a board and they harumph and they move these pieces around. So I only knew like that level of it. But then when I was, ironically enough, maybe irony is not the right word. When I was 12, 13, 14, and I started doing musical theater,
There
was a musical called Chess. It's a really good musical.
Oh, I love Chess the musical.
Yes.
I own Chess the musical.
See, there you go.
I saw it in London.
Oh, so I see. So you saw the British production, which I have very specific thoughts about the British
versus the American
production.
And then we also saw a production here in Eagle Rock under an overpass in a tiny black box theater.
How did I miss this?
I don't know. It was one of the first things Andy and I bonded on.
Oh, that's so nice.
Because whenever he drops something inconsequential, he will burst into song. This is the one situation.
Yeah, I try most to avoid. It was that, I think
so that's what sucked you into it.
The song in that musical where the chorus is sort of in the background naming, you can sort of barely hear it, but they're naming every world chess champion.
Yeah.
And sort of the year all the way through. And I remember thinking like, well, who are those guys?
Yeah.
And I toddled down to the library as you did in 1993 or whatever.
You want to know more about chess?
Yeah.
Take a trip to your local
your Phoenix
Voyagers with Central an exclamation
Branch.
Point.
There you go. Yeah. And then I'm
glad it wasn't One Night in Bangkok.
Yeah.
Only hit song from chess was One Night in Bangkok.
Which is hilarious to hear that song come on the radio or even in the in the end of that the second Hangover movie. Mike Tyson comes out and sings that song, like, over the credits.
Really?
Because that movie takes place in Bangkok.
Okay.
And no one it's Mike Tyson, and he's doing the actual lyrics. So he's saying, like, you know, in a showdown that the chess world is blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And you're like, no one actually listened to these lyrics and realized it's all about
chess
tournament.
Yeah. And this kid, growing up, the sad sack.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Sad.
Poor.
And that musical is essentially not even that loosely based on Bobby Fischer.
Right.
So that was a big entry into actually wanting to kind of know about the history of it.
And so then you started looking up like old chess masters.
Yeah.
And then did you start getting interested in like the moves they made to win the games?
Yeah. There's some of the specific in-game stuff, but really the sort of in sports, what you call off the field antics and style.
It's personality.
Personality. My personal favorite, in about the 1920s, the champion was a guy named Jose Capablanca.
Jose Capablanca.
Yeah, Jose. He looked like Antonio Banderas.
Oh, did he? Dreamboat.
The only like non-Caucasian ever to be like the recognized world champion.
Oh, okay.
And he was one of those guys who he kind of never had to study the game. It just came naturally to him.
Oh,
he was maybe more likely to be looking at some girl in the crowd than he was paying attention to the board, but he had style and flair and was considered, you know.
And he won.
Just a natural genius, and he won. He was unstoppable for a long time.
And this was in the 20s?
In the 20s, 20s into the 30s.
Okay. Wow. And where was he from?
He was, I know
like
he,
South America,
he was from Cuba, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
So it was that realization that, oh, this, there's an artistry to this game.
Yeah.
It's not just, because I wasn't a kid who could buckle down and study, you know?
Right.
I was a kid for whom either things kind of came naturally or they didn't.
Yeah.
And realizing that, oh, sometimes you can be, you know, the top through like some combination of natural talent and study.
Yeah.
And not just what you think of a chess player as like a guy who's locked away, you know, with a mound of books.
Right, right. Just studying.
Just studying all day long.
Squares.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So that's great. I mean, aren't there any Chinese winners?
Not recognized champions.
Not recognized?
Yeah.
Who's the boss of that?
The Russians, of course. I mean, were forever. It is now the current boss is, and he's going to be for a long time, is like a 23-year-old Scandinavian kid who looks like...
Oh, who won?
Almost looks like a model. Yeah. He's the current world champion.
What's his name? Any idea?
Magnus Carlsen, I want to say.
Magnus Carlsen.
Yeah, as only they can have that name over there, you know.
Right, and have it not
he's
sound
He's either
going to
win, like, the world's strongest man competition or...
He's hiding buttons.
Or the chess. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I don't know what the hell that is. That's weird. Magnus Carlsen. That's hilarious. Okay, so... I don't know where to go with this. Do we want to talk about chess or do we talk about the personality of chess?
I mean, can do both. I think that what the most interesting thing is the sort of, to some extent, the socio-political thing surrounding, you know, what chess represented for so long. I think if you see a movie or something about it now, what they want to talk about is sort of like Bobby Fischer single-handedly taking down the entire Soviet regime, you know.
Right, in a weird match of two nerds over a table.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I love, that there was a time that the most famous person in the world was the world chess champion.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And it's like, there's a romantic notion sort of for that time that like...
And how long have people been... I mean, chess, there is a song in chess that tells you the history of chess.
Yeah.
In India, I think it was, right?
Right.
And I don't know if that's
accurate. Kind of an apocryphal story.
Right. But it's a good one.
Yeah, it is a good one. It's hard to know exactly kind of when the rules solidified.
Right.
There's been some version, you know, for thousands of years of...
But is it agreed that it was an Eastern game and it came west?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's agreed that it was Arabic to some notion, or I mean
Arabic or even Far East, or
I think started there and then spread to the east before then spreading to the west.
Okay.
As I think would be the notion.
End around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you fake one way
right,
and
right.
You go the other way. That Silk Road runs both ways.
Exactly. You know? That's
yeah, yeah.
Isn't it?
we're trading spices. Things are happening. Yeah.
I want to put that on a pillow.
There we go.
The Silk Road runs both ways.
I feel like that could mean something deeper than it really means. But
right.
Yeah.
And whenever I say end around, I always think reach around. I don't know, just because it's just gross.
Yeah.
Anyway,
like you've taken what would be like a sports term and just turned it into a sex term. Well,
weirdly enough, I don't know enough about the sex industry.
You're living here in Van Nuys. Yeah,
I'm here in Van Nuys.
This is what this city has turned you into, Jackie.
Exactly. In stand-up comedy, you'd think I'd get every dick joke
ever. Oh, my gosh.
And sadly not.
Well, at this point, you just have to turn yourself off to them, really.
Right. Yeah. Right. I'm just like, oh, I see what you did there.
Right,
and
right.
Call it a day.
Mm-hmm. So, good end around. Anyway, yeah. We're done.
So, DJ, what do you know about sort of early competition of chess?
There was, so until about the 1870s, it was unofficial.
Okay.
The best, the sort of in the salons and the people who played would sort of agree who was clearly the best at the time.
Okay.
The American entry into that is a guy named Paul Morphy, who, Morphy.
Okay.
Who in probably about the 1750s.
Right.
Was hands down considered the world champion. He, you know, took a vessel and sailed over to Europe and played every notable player in Europe.
In the middle 1700s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I want to say, yeah, this would be pre-Revolutionary War.
Yeah, yeah, because 1870 was what you just said.
1870 is when the actual, like, recognized, there's a governing body that recognizes one champion.
Okay.
Through competition was in the 1800s.
Okay.
The 100 or 200 years before that.
There was just sort of an agreement.
Just sort of an agreement. Yeah,
you don't want to play that guy.
Right.
That guy's good. Or you really want to play that guy.
This guy's the best guy in Paris. We'll send him to London and we'll talk about who the best guy in London is, independent who wins.
Oh, interesting.
We'll consider them the, you know, kind of the guy from this region. And
talk about some disposable income.
Yeah.
It's a rich man's game.
Sure. It was certainly in the time that, you know, you might be sponsored by your parents to go sail around the world to culture yourself
sure,
for a couple of years.
Sure. the Grand Tour. That.
But and, that guy, Paul Morphy, quit. I mean, he was on top, and then at 21 or something, he stopped playing. He went to law school and became a lawyer and eventually died crazy and of syphilis or something like that.
Oh, right. As everyone did.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1850, he was 21, so... So he would have been in his 30s during the Revolutionary War.
If it was that, yeah, right, yeah. Something like that.
So who knows if he came
not
back
good times.
And fought the good fight.
Yeah.
A la Hamilton. Who knows?
Yeah. We're so current. We're like, a la Hamilton, right, kids?
Right.
Hamilton?
Right. Anyone?
We're talking
anyone?
About musicals. Yeah.
Let's go to the next.
It's a hot ticket. Yeah.
It's a hot ticket. So in the 1870s, was that the Russians who were
that
like-
was the first couple guys were a German and an Austrian. So that was still your kind of Austro-Hungarian Empire. I think
right.
a lot of the
very Western Europe.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah. The world's power was kind of solidified there.
Mm-hmm.
So Wilhelm Steinitz was the first guy, and that's like 1873.
Okay.
That you know, a governing body that was created said
had Robert's rules. They had a charter.
Yeah, exactly.
They probably had like a medal.
Traveled the King's Road and then
then gave him a toy.
Yeah.
And said, "Here you go. You're the one."
Yeah, and probably a 1,000 guilder prize or whatever
right,
it would have been.
Right, whatever it would have been.
For winning. And he was recognized. And then a system was put in place wherein, you know.
You got to play that guy.
Yeah, candidates work their way up. And then you get to play the champion and, you know, attempt to wrest it from him.
I feel good that the Germans kind of solidified that.
Yeah.
I feel like they're an organizational folk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They know
if anyone
to...
was going to be, like, efficient and compact about, you know, looking at a thing.
Well, if we're going to do this, let's do it. And
For better or for worse.
Right.
Sometimes.
Well, often for worse. Well, sometimes for worse. But I grew up in Milwaukee, and so there's a lot of a lot of grid streets.
Good point. You're right. Easy to get around. Yeah.
So that's 1870.
Uh-huh.
So when do the Russians take over?
The Russians really take over. The guy who beat Jose Capablanca was a guy named Alexander Alekhine, who was – this is sort of the first example of, you know, as I said, like Capablanca, passionate. Maybe he's not working as hard. A guy who just came in with a crushing work ethic and absolute – hell-bent, assholic determination to win.
Right.
And eventually wrested the title from him, which began a more or less uninterrupted... He was kind of pre-USSR system.
Okay.
But then all the way through 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s...
It was all a Soviet thing.
We're calling these guys amateur chess players, but they've been drafted into the Soviet military.
Right.
Because their job is to play chess and that sort of thing.
It's a great national pride. Let's make sure we win. Yeah. What I like the idea of is of Jose going, so I lost? Oh, I'm just going to go hit on women then.
Yeah. I have no problem with that. Yeah. The story that I almost half referenced, there's an anecdote of the head of the organization taking Jose Capablanca and Alexander Alekhine to a cabaret or something like that.
Right.
And they're sitting up in a box and him saying the whole time, Jose's eyes are on the legs of the dancing girls.
Yes.
And Alexander's eyes are on his pocket chess set that he's brought to work out moves.
Oh my God.
So he's not even paying attention to the dancing girls.
Right, right. He's not living in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's...
But it turns out in a game like that, not wandering eye guy is going to win eventually.
Right, right. Not wandering eye guy he cares more to some extent.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's, that's amazing. So Soviet. And then Bobby Fischer in the early 70s.
Yeah. And Bobby Fischer's thing, why it's so crazy to wrest it away from the Soviets is that not only, are they training together? They have a system, they have a thing. The way the tournaments are set up to get to play the champion.
Yeah.
The next, like, let's say 12 best guys in the world play a tournament to try to win through to play the champion.
Right.
If 7 or 8 of those guys are Soviet, what Fischer claimed, and he was right, is that they would essentially collude to help each other through the tournament.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm going to lose to you kind of on purpose because you have a better chance of beating Bobby.
The American,
So I'm going to give you some free points. You get to rest up. Meanwhile, Bobby has to sit down and actually beat everybody.
At one after another.
And beat them, not draw and get half points and split and work your way through.
Okay, because you can. There's draws.
There's draws.
Oh, right, because I remember when your king just moves around a bunch.
Yeah,
and
there's a few ways you can draw. Yeah, that one, the king moving around at the end is if a position is repeated 3 times, it just goes to an automatic draw.
Yeah, so then it's just boring.
Yeah, it's just boring. If we get to an end and you're going here, and I just move my king and back and forth and back and forth.
Yeah,
they just say you're obviously not doing anything. That's a draw.
Right.
You can agree to a draw, which is how most of them end up happening.
Okay. Because you just look at it and go, oh, I'm...
Yeah, we're in an intractable position.
Yeah.
No one's going to gain a huge advantage. Let's just split the points and move on.
Right. Okay, so I want to hear the rest. I know there's a Bobby Fischer movie.
Yeah.
Because my brother Phil plays chess fair amount. He plays it online.
Oh, yeah.
And he's part of some monthly group that you have to pay. And sometimes he's my brother Phil can be kind of a dick.
Okay, and shout out to Phil. All right,
shout out Philcation. Let's tell a little story about him going to Disneyland with his kids.
Oh God,
not wanting to go on any of the rides. Spent a fair amount of time sitting next to the castle, throwing popcorn on the ground so that a person would have to come out and sweep it up.
A person? No, I thought. I really hoped you were going to say for a duck.
No,
but no duck.
No. He's like, this place is super clean.
Oh, yeah,
I wonder how long it would take for a Disney employee
testing the scary efficiency of Disney cleaning.
Yes. And so, sometimes when he's losing, if the other person is kind of a jackass, he will write, oh, my mom says I have to go to bed. So, I gotta leave.
Oh.
And he's 55, 56 years old.
Thinks they've been losing to a 13-year-old.
To a child.
Yeah.
Yes. And, so in other news.
Well, the mind games are a huge, huge part of it.
Right.
That's actually.
I think that's his favorite part.
Right. I mean, that really is. And through, some of the Bobby Fischer stuff.
Yeah. Cause he played mind games on them back, right?
Yeah. He sort of, invented that. I'm going to defeat you mentally before the tournament even starts.
Oh, really?
Through, he would refuse to play. He would say that
the wind was off.
Yes.
The
air conditioning was too loud. The cameras that, because the film cameras, I can hear them whirring. The real, real big one when he played Spassky for the 1972 championship was the squares were not to his liking. So he asked, I wanted to say it was a shade of darkish green and yellow. So
okay.
Not black and white squares. It was too harsh on his eyes or something. So,
oh my God.
You got to get a new custom board made in with different colored squares and that kind of thing.
Wow.
But he felt that he had been wronged getting to these tournaments.
Right.
Having to play through this Soviet thing.
Right.
And decided he was going to kind of take it upon himself to
reintroduce some more bullshit into the arena.
And there were crazier guys than that. There would be tournaments in the 60s. That they would stop because, this guy's hired a mesmerist to sit over in the crowd and mesmerize me. He's sending negative mental waves at me.
Ew, wow.
Crazy stuff like that.
Wow. Is that an amethyst I see? What is that doing over there?
Yeah.
That's Crazyville.
Right.
Okay.
Two guys had to have the table, much like we're sitting at now, they had to put a special board in between the two of them to keep them from kicking each other during the game. Gentleman's game.
Grown-up men.
Yeah,
adult
grown-up men who've flown around the world in 1960s airplanes to go play each other.
Right, in a suit.
Yeah. While thousands of people watch.
Right. So thousands of people, are they televised?
Yeah, well, so that was part of the big, through all those tournaments, thousands of people would show up live to watch.
Okay.
The big thing that they would do kind of pre-technology is, you'd have a huge board kind of set up on the wall with magnet pieces.
And guys
would move them around so that even if you were so far back, you couldn't see.
You could see the next move was.
You could see or the position that was currently on the board.
Right.
So then you could whisper with your buddies and guess.
Right.
I think Capablanca is going to do this. I think,
Talk about Monday morning quarterback.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That's real nerdy stuff.
That is. So, do they mostly have them in large cities?
It'd
be like a New York or a London.
London. I mean, Buenos Aires was a big place. That's part of the real fun and interesting thing too is tracking sort of the course of the world through where these tournaments were held.
Yeah.
Yugoslavia has a big tournament. Now there's not a Yugoslavia anymore.
Right.
Because at the time, whatever dictator put up, £2 million as the prize for the guys to come play there.
A gajillion dollars. Was like, I'll go to Yugoslavia.
Yeah, exactly.
I took a train once through Yugoslavia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 1989 before it became
so it was like legit Yugoslavia.
Yeah. It was, and I bought, and I wanted the soda and the train stopped and there was somebody selling giant 2-liter bottles of orange Fanta.
Oh yeah.
It was still Soviet bloc then.
Right.
Wait, or it had just gone from Soviet bloc.
It would be right then. Yeah.
And so it was very poor, and everyone was trying to get their shit together. And I was like, I guess I don't know how to not buy orange soda, even though the last thing I want in my life is orange soda
when it's presented to me. My opinion about orange soda is that The entire business model for orange soda is just based upon people occasionally remembering that it exists. Like, sometimes you're at KFC and you just go like, oh, yeah, orange soda's a thing.
Right. It's orange and grape.
Yeah.
And that's, you're just like, oh, sometimes you have, I want a grape
you
soda.
You have one a year. That's and you go like, I remember. Okay, thanks. See you next year, orange soda.
My home club, Acme Comedy Club, has root beer on tap, like a fancy root beer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, does it get old?
Right.
Does anyone?
Yeah, how long can it sit there in a keg or whatever?
Well, I think it's in like regular soda bottles, so it's fine. So it's just a syrup.
Yeah.
But it. Maybe. I actually do not know.
But artisanal root beer, this is actually a great time to be a root beer fan.
Oh, it's a great time to be a root
beer. This is high times if you're an R beer, as we call them. That's probably not what we call them. There's actually the last few cons, because I'm at because of other nerdy things, I'm at 10 or 12 huge comic book conventions a year.
Nice.
And recently there's a great company that makes their own sodas that has sort of a truck that parks up on the convention floor. With like spouts off the side of it, you buy
like in the dealer room,
like like on the vendor floor.
Okay,
and you buy like a nice pewter like mug, like it looks like a Renaissance fair kind of thing, and you buy it for let's say $20, and then you get to refill it as many times as you want through the day. So you walk around the convention floor, and there's people with flagons of sarsaparilla.
What's the name of the
offhand? I cannot remember the name of the truck. So,
well, we give a shout out.
Shout out to
good work.
Yeah, you guys look for them. You're doing God's work
when you're
at
WonderCon or whatever.
Yeah.
Is it
WonderCon, the Wizard Worlds? They're big at kind of thing.
Were you at that DragonCon thing?
Dragon, I haven't yet done yet. Atlanta
me neither.
One.
Yeah,
and also I know Andy has. The indie one, the Gen Con.
He's got
some board
game
there. Yeah.
Yeah, he loves that. He will never not go to that.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't matter how he has to find the money.
Yep.
And you're like, okay.
There's a lot of things you can spin into a business trip, it turns out. You know.
Oh, and it's a business trip.
Yeah, in his case, it's a direct business trip. But yeah.
Yeah, so funny. Okay, so now let's talk about you playing chess. Now, who do you play with?
I used to play in a club. My skills have eroded now. To the point where almost anyone listening to this would beat me handily.
Except me.
There you go.
Because to my knowledge, you're supposed to play both aggressively and defensively at the same time.
Yeah, there's strategy and there's tactics. You know, your strategy is your overall, like, let's control the center of the board. Let's make sure my pieces are well spaced.
Okay.
Your tactics are, if I put my knight here and it threatens both her queen and her bishop, she's going to have to move one of those and I can capture the other one.
Okay.
So you kind of want a balance of those two things.
Okay.
I used to play pretty competitively I was mostly a speed chess player.
Okay.
So you've got 5 minutes to complete all your moves.
All of them?
All of them.
So
I have 5 minutes, you have 5 minutes.
Okay.
There's a clock. When I push my little thing down, your timer starts.
Okay.
So you're thinking, you're just, as long as you want to take, you make your move, you push your button down, my timer starts.
Ah.
So the total game isn't going to take longer than 10 minutes, but the winner is whoever either wins or can force you to make your time run out. Because you're stuck in a position you're thinking about or whatever.
Oh, interesting.
It's what you see guys if you go to Washington Square Park.
Well, no, I've seen it done. I've never understood. I was like, I thought it was just a way to keep the game moving.
Yeah.
Because if you're sitting there for a half an hour thinking about where you're going to move your damn. But I didn't know that there was you both have 5 minutes. So what if the game's not over at the end of the 10 minutes? The game is over.
Someone is going to physically run out of time.
Okay.
When I press the button to start with, if you only have 3 seconds left.
And you don't make a move.
If you don't make a move in that amount of time, you're either on an analog one, your flag drops. If you have a digital one, it beeps.
Yep.
Either you or I is going to run out of time. If you can make a legal move and hit your button and kick
have
that ball back to me.
Have you ever played past that?
Yeah, that game?
Yeah,
or
in that kind of game, you're like, oh, this is actually a good game. We should keep playing.
No. By that point, because it's so speed and tactics-based, by that point, someone's probably lost all their bishops and some rooks and some whatever.
Okay.
So usually you're at a what you call a material advantage, you know, to such a degree. It wouldn't be worth slow playing out.
Right.
Because someone's already up, you know,
somebody already has more pieces.
Yeah.
And they could just batter you.
Right. If we just sat and thought it out. And that clock is still used in, you know, professional competition.
Yeah.
It's the same clock. And I want to say the controls, the rules are you have 2 hours to do your first 25 moves and then something like a half hour per 10 moves after that. So you can gain more. The quicker you make your moves, the sort of more time you gain on the back end. But that's when you have a game that usually takes 4, 5, 6 hours to play.
Okay.
You know.
Wait, so the timer can be changed. So
yeah,
it's not just 5 minutes.
Yeah, no,
it can be an hour. Uh-huh. It can be whatever.
Absolutely, yeah. It's okay. You wind it to the back and you set it. to whatever time control you want.
It's a clock.
Yeah.
So yes. you
it's
can
It's just
pick.
A dual clock that right. shuts off when I, you know, mine shuts off when I press it, yours turns on.
Right.
Just two clocks duct taped together, basically.
Essentially. Where the hell did that stem from, the fact of people just staring at each other for too long?
Yeah. Yeah. I think like anything, you know, if you play basketball, someone's going to say, hey, let's play 3-on-3. Okay. Where normally it's 5-on-5. It's a longer game. It's let's play half court. Let's boil this down to
The
pure action of the thing.
Right. When you deal out all the things in Monopoly, where you
Let's play the quick version.
Yeah, the quick version of Risk or Land or whatever.
If there's a quick version of Risk, I'd like to hear about it.
Well, Lord of the Rings Risk is
actually moves on pretty quick.
It does, because it's finite, because the ring has to move to Mordor.
Oh, and so there's a second thing happening.
Right, there's another game mechanic, and the thing about the ring going to Mordor is that every turn, the person, whoever's controlling their armies, has to roll all the attack dice, and if you roll all sixes, and it turns out the Nazgul get the ring and the game's over.
Oh, yeah. So you can crap out, essentially.
Yeah, it can be over immediately.
Yeah.
But the great thing about the Lord of the Rings episode is that there are only 10 turns anyway.
Oh, that's good. Right.
I think it's 10 turns.
They probably,
to get to Mordor.
Right, right, right. Well, that's true, because at some point Sauron's going to take over. You know, there's the like Alfred Hitchcock bomb in a briefcase.
Right.
To Lord of the Rings in a way that regular Risk doesn't really have. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're gonna...
Well, I think Risk has done a very good job of trying to shorten the game up.
Yeah.
It's because they're like, no, this is for three people who want to play Axis and Allies when they're done playing Risk.
Right.
So those guys are out of their mind.
Yeah, there's already a game for those guys. Let's let them play that.
Yeah, those people are already having that time.
Yeah.
So let's try to tighten it up.
Yeah.
But, So you mostly just played that the time.
So I would play that, and the way that would work, I would be part of. You'd go to a meeting place or a club or whatever, and they'll do what's called a ladder system. So they have five long tables set up, each with four or five boards on it.
Okay.
You play your speed chess game. If you win, you move up a slot. If you lose, you move down.
Okay.
And what you're trying to do is win your way sort of to the top chair.
Okay.
So you know that some guy, if he dominates, is going to sit at the top the whole time and crush everybody. You're trying to win your way closer
to play
to him.
That guy. Yeah.
It's like a real, real quick abbreviated version of a world championship tournament, but with like out of work nerds.
Right. And it's a good way to spend a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Right.
I was, you know, this is when I was 17, 18, 19 years old. So it's okay. Like, it's keeping me off the streets, as they say.
That's it.
Yeah.
You're going to was it in like a game store? Or?
Usually in like a VFW hall or that kind of thing.
Okay. Because it was a bunch of old dudes.
Yeah. A bunch of old dudes.
Yeah.
You know, someone rented out a ballroom or whatever kind of thing it was.
And he's teaching an intro to game design class over at the New York Film Institute.
Oh, that's great.
Burbank.
Oh, cool.
And this is the second semester he's teaching it. And he always has like just a handful of students because it's a for-profit.
Yeah. That New York. And, yeah. You see their ads everywhere. They're good at that.
It's the DeVry of film and game design. You know, and the game design part of it is super new.
Yeah, I didn't even know that they had that aspect of it.
Yeah, they have I guess it's certified or whatever, but his students, he had the first day yesterday, and two of his students are Saudi Arabian women.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually, I told him you were coming over today, and he said, oh, chess came up yesterday. They want to learn how to play chess. And I said, Saudi Arabia is full of chess players.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't already know? Yeah.
I guess women are not allowed to play chess.
Oh, good Lord.
Over in Saudi Arabia,
That your sentence could have ended with just, like, an ellipses. Like, I guess women are allowed to ...
Welcome to Saudi Arabia.
Play chess, drive, whatever.
The weirdest thing about Saudi Arabia, though, is that they are huge proponents of sending everybody, men and women, all of their youth to the West to get these degrees.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which means, that's why they're having trouble with all of the women who come back from the West who are like, I would like to drive to the mall.
Yeah, hey.
I'm willing to wear my hat.
Right.
But I have to go to the mall. I'm willing
to wear my swoopy fabric hat. Is that what they're called? That's what they're called.
Swoopy fabric hat. But it's a – and they have – I was in Riyadh one time.
Oh, yeah.
And they have two different
malls.
Please
tell me you were doing stand-up there.
I was doing stand-up.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah.
It was a military thing, so I didn't get to perform for the Saudis.
Oh,
but,
got it.
But the – except for the collaborators. I'm sure that's what they call them.
translators would have been fine, or advisors, but you
traders. No, I'm so sorry. Yeah. It's funny because they have separate entrances for men and women in restaurants.
Oh, they have really
the, yeah,
still.
Yeah, they have a men's side, then they have a family side where men and women and children can eat together.
Okay,
and then
is it not just the entrance? Is it separated the whole way, or is it just the entrance and then now you're in the same big restaurant?
You're in the same building,
right?
But and weirdly enough, like we went into this Turkish restaurant. Another slap in my face. Except for the food was amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, and it was a nickel. Anyway, whoa. So it was our military liaison dudes, and then me and April Macy. Comic.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yep.
And so the four of us walk in, and we're in the family part. But you can see through to the men's part. And the men's part can see through to the ladies' part. Or the so it was like...
It's like they know and they just want to create like noses against the window or something, right. You know? Yeah.
It is exciting.
Like if you truly wanted to separate it.
A glimpse of an eyelash.
Yeah, yeah. And,
but...
I can imagine April Macy having to...
She looked good in the headscarf and the abaya.
I was just going to say,
she looked super foxy.
Yeah.
Because she did good eye makeup.
Yeah, right.
Me, I just look like my grandma. Huh. And because with the headscarf and the abaya.
Right. Just focusing, yeah.
Just looking like an old Armenian lady. And, but it was... she was very funny. We were... When we got the outfits, because we had to put them on before we left the base. And she comes out of her bedroom and she yells... Who is ready for some limited personal freedom? Let's do this.
Let's get pumped up.
That's
for some,
the greatest line in the world, April Macy.
That's funny.
And, so there's also separate malls.
Yeah.
Oh. Where there's a women, there's essentially like the Gap. And
yeah,
because
it's almost impossible to segregate all within a mall. You just have to have the whole building.
But then I guess that there's like a Gap and an Old Navy and a Cinnabon that just men go to.
Yeah.
And you're just like, well, that doesn't sound efficient at all.
Yeah.
But so.
Well, and is that the thing? Like if they were out of an item at your Gap.
Well, they send it over.
We'll call over to the other store. And then
then you have to do it through a slot.
Right.
I have no idea how they do it. But
it comes wrapped in its own tiny veil.
But all the Saudi women that I've ever met, they're like, no, I don't mind wearing the headscarf and the abaya for religious reasons. I just want to be able to drive anywhere I want to go. And then I want to play some chess.
We're putting too much on the notion of the clothing. And then it's like, well, it's really the day-to-day.
Right. But it's interesting because the Saudi government sends all these people all over the world and then expects them to come back and go, no, I don't ever want to.
Hey, the London School of Economics was great. But anyway, I'm cool with going right back to
having to walk six feet
behind you or whatever.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I wonder if chess for them is one of those, well, we can't have women
learning strategy.
Or feeling like they're intellectually superior in ways and that whole kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Because it's, I would like to. So do you ever slow play or?
Yeah. I'll hop on the computer every so often. And
you have an app of some sort?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a computer program called Chessmaster, which has been the number one selling sort of PC one for 25 years or whatever.
And they just keep updating.
They just keep, they're on. I mean, my last edition was probably Chessmaster 9000, which is 6 or 7 years old at this point.
Okay.
I felt the need to stop upgrading because it can beat me so handily.
Right. There's no need to.
I don't need new computing power here.
Right.
We're fine. Yeah.
Right. I don't need to know that you figured out 9 other ways.
Yeah.
To fix
exactly.
To
it's just another like,
my clock.
Does this one have a Star Trek board? Cool. And then maybe I'll buy it. You know. Move my little Captain Kirk around.
Because it can be themed.
Yeah. But that's also an interesting part about it that probably appealed to me. I've got 5 or 6
actual sets.
Different sets that are either wooden or I've got one that's lead or not lead, heavy copper. I don't know, pieces.
Like metal.
Metal that's
shaped normal or
that's Don Quixote. So the rooks are windmills. You know, as if he's sort of tilting at the windmills, and then he's the king, and then Sancho Panza is the bishop or whatever, and that whole kind of thing. So there, you forget that either they can just be, you know, an amazing Art Deco-ish design, or you've got your Lord of the Rings sets and your.
Right, my nephew got really into chess for a second, and so for Christmas 1 year, I spent way too much money on my young nephew Michael.
Yeah,
and got him.
Oh, you're welcome, Michael.
And it's a Mario. Mario Kart.
Oh, that's fun.
It's Mario and Luigi.
Yeah.
One side's Mario, one side's Luigi.
Yeah.
And they're adorable.
Yeah.
And he's actually really, I mean, he's where you were, I think, in high school, where he's board.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So he's in chess club and he's right. playing a lot of chess.
I think for, yeah, kids, there's, you know, a wealth of stories of, you know, 10-year-old prodigies and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And on through that age up into high school and all that before, you know, life provides so many other distractions. It really is there's a set of rules to that game that are, you can wrap your head around at least the way the rules go.
Yeah.
And then from there, there's an unlimited, you know, it opens up a world of unlimited possibilities. But once you grasp the basics of the rules, you know, kids can wrap their head around that.
Yeah. It's interesting because, so I played him and at one point he said, well, that's a really good move. And I had no idea what I'd done.
Yeah.
Because I know how the characters work.
Right.
The characters. I know how the pieces can be moved.
I thought you meant like you shot a banana out of Yoshi's, like it was Mario Kart
right,
or something.
Right, it was amazing.
And
all of a sudden, it's like, oh my God, mushroom.
Yeah.
And the mushrooms are the pawns.
Oh, good call. Yeah, that makes sense.
Why wouldn't they be?
Yeah.
And so... there, and I think Yoshi is the king and the queen was riding something else.
You wouldn't want princess to be both queens. You've got to find Mario's lacking in female characters. Or was it princess both ways?
I think it was
two different outfits.
Two different outfits, okay. Two different colors.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
So, but I always liked the knight.
Yeah.
Just because it can move in an interesting fashion.
Yeah. It's a little sneakier.
It's a little, yeah, it's got some, you have to actually see when you move your piece.
Yeah.
Am I about to get
right.
snagged?
It's not as quick of a way to glance and see that you're threatened because it can hop over things. It has an unorthodox square coverage that it has.
So yeah.
It's not as much of a, if I move here, I'm in line with that bishop. There's a little more thought to it.
Right. So when you first start playing, like, because I don't, all I do is I go in and I'm like, well, I play it like, it isn't right, but I play it like checkers, where I'm like, oh, king me.
Let's just try to get as far to the other side
to the
kind
other
of as
side,
you can.
Yeah. That can't possibly be the way that's supposed
no,
to be played.
No, not really. No. I mean, the slow creep of that would be fine if you have all your other pieces to sort of defend those.
Okay.
But you're, you know, yeah, what you... at its very basis form, you want to be threatening as much of the board as you can be while protecting those pieces that are threatening the board.
Okay.
So you just send two knights hard charging to the other side.
They're
going to
die.
But they're going to be floating in the middle of nowhere with no protection, you know.
No backup.
And then someone's going to find a way to either drive them back and you wasted your time.
Yeah.
Or to just take them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you want to sort of be big on the board.
Yeah.
You want to try to declare this
yes,
is my
own, yeah have some ownership over especially the center. So you've got those pawns out there that are, you know, kind of useless in and of themselves, but the way that they provide kind of a recapture possibility. So, you know, you've got your pawn, let's say, defending your knight.
Yep.
Where if someone were to take that knight, you're immediately going to take that piece back with a pawn.
Right.
So those pawns are there to sort of provide like a little bit of backup for all your active pieces that are out there really doing things.
Okay. So, what, like, your first move, is it from the edges or is it from the center?
From the center in general. The
okay.
most common move, opening move, is moving the pawn in front of your king, which I think is in the notation. The way they notate a board, as you look at it, it goes A, B, C, D, E, F, G,
okay.
H, I suppose 8.
Like
from left to right.
It's okay, like a grid.
Like a grid. And then up, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay.
So most common move would be taking either pawn that's on E2,
yep.
the one that's right in front of your king, moving that up two spaces.
Yep.
So now you've got that guy out in the middle of the board. You're starting to establish a foothold.
A foothold.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then the other person takes theirs and then you're staring at each other.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yep. Or kicking each other depending on
right.
you know,
if they put
how much animosity.
The,
yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
yeah.
And
there's been
the queen.
Yeah.
And then you could take that. You could take that pawn.
Once you get something that can, it's going to be two or three moves before you've loosened pieces that are really going to be able to take anything.
Okay.
Because you've got, you know, I move my pawn out there. You move your pawn out. They're standing face to face.
Right.
Not, because they capture diagonally, they can't take each other.
So you wouldn't move your queen pawn up.
That's a common next move.
Yep.
To really start establishing that middle. The oldest and simplest open invented by a bishop 1,000 years ago named Ruy Lopez,
okay.
R-U-Y, is to move that pawn up first and then, and you might love this, your knight out immediately after it to start getting that guy active.
Yeah.
And then a bishop out. So now you've gotten some active pieces to the middle of the board.
Okay, that's usually what I've done.
That's, yeah, yeah.
It's a, I like to play a 1,000-year-old game. Yeah, I like to, yeah. I don't want to surprise anyone.
Pretend that the theory hasn't advanced right. since
Nobody
since
knows what's
then.
Coming.
Yep,
Nobody
exactly,
knows.
Yeah.
Look at these three guys out.
Yeah, 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 exactly. You're throwing them some crazy. I still use that all the time because it's just a simple opening move, and I get crushed because people have been figuring out how to defend it for 1,000 years.
Right. How and do you, hence, do you know do you offhand how to defend it?
I mean, if someone else spends more time just advancing some pawns and some things to threaten the center, I now have a bishop and a knight kind of hung out to dry.
Okay.
And usually at some point I'm going to have to bring them back, which is a waste of my time.
Yeah.
If any time, you know, you think about it, white always moves first,
yep.
black moves second. So if I move first, I have an inherent slight advantage over you in the sense that any move I make, you have to waste your time responding to what I've done.
Okay.
Until you can do something to sort of flip that around.
Okay.
So if you've threatened my pieces and forced me to move them back at a time that I didn't want to, you've now taken, you know, the tempo over.
Ah, there you go. So, yeah. So it's all that.
Yeah.
And that's when you pick, it's you put the pawns in each hand
yeah,
and then
usually,
you guess.
Yep.
Uh-huh. To see who goes first because that is an advantage.
Because it is an advantage.
All
so
right.
in your pro game, you have an arbiter who's, you know, on stage watching and sort of making sure no false moves are made and that kind of thing. And he's going to be the one who's going to hold little pieces behind his back.
Right. What, how do you cheat? Is there a way to cheat?
I mean, there's a few. One way would be the most common accusation of cheating. If you touch a piece, you are expected to move that piece.
Right.
There is there's a word, a French word called je double, which means I adjust.
Mm-hmm.
You are supposed to say that out loud before touching a piece. If you do, or you say that out loud if you touch a piece and intend to not move it.
Ah.
So I can fix my little piece on my square if it's annoying yeah. me that it's not centered. As long as I sort of say je double beforehand and move it around.
Okay.
Your most common accusation of cheating would be guys touching a piece. Did they say that word? Did they not?
Ah.
It's kind of a gentleman's agreement. Maybe someone touched a piece and didn't move it. And now they're looking to see what the other guy is going to react, you know. And
yeah. I do remember, because if you touch a piece and someone goes,
yeah.
you're like, ah,
right.
this is a good idea.
Maybe I see what part of the board you look at next because you're going, now I know I want to do, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Sort of like a bluff in poker. I'm looking to see what your reaction is. To
okay. I see.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's sneaky up there. Yeah.
It is sneaky up there.
Yeah.
Because I remember playing, because my brothers taught me when I was little, and there was a big thing about how if you touched a piece, you couldn't take your hand off it and then put your pan back on it and move it.
Right, right.
You could take your hand off it and then you couldn't move it.
And you couldn't move it.
Again.
Yeah.
Is
that's
that
kind of a slightly
it?
Different home rule version of that thing.
Fair
yeah.
enough. Okay, yeah. yeah.
To keep me from staring at you and touching my pieces one by one. And so,
what
and
about
like,
this
like
one?
A game of operation where you go, ooh, and I go, ha, now I know. Yeah.
Now I know how to do this.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
my
also,
God, that's hilarious.
Now, as far as I know with the highest levels, there's a lot of drug testing and things like that.
Oh, Adderall?
Know, yeah,
Adderall?
Of course. I mean,
the kids with the Adderall.
Yeah, I know. I
miss the Adderall boom.
I write on shows and I'm often like the oldest person in the writer's room. And
yep.
I forget that 25-year-olds are like, I'm going to finish this script today because I've got a pocket full of Adderall. And I'm like, oh, man, I was just going to have a cup of coffee.
Right. Where did they get it?
Everyone, I think because of the ease of diagnosis of things like ADHD.
Okay.
And if
so you can just find a doc. It's like,
yeah,
it's like
pot
doctor.
If you go in and you say, doc, I'm having some trouble concentrating, chances are they're going to say, have a low dose prescription of Adderall.
And then you can take as many as you want.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Get some work done.
Get some real
kids,
work
if you're
done.
Listening to the Dork Forest, I think if you take one thing away from this.
Try not to get addicted to Adderall.
Yeah,
is what
yeah.
Grandma Cation would like to tell you.
Grammy K says,
Grammy
no Adderall
K,
for you.
No Adderall. Just
yeah.
to
use condoms when you're in love. And no
exactly.
Adderall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And get your own car.
Yeah. Yeah. There
anyway,
you go. Yeah.
So if you're going to be in business.
Yeah. But
so,
yeah, whatever the guys through the 50s and 60s were taking greenies and whatever.
Oh, right, right.
The name of all the pre-Adderall pills were and that kind of thing.
Right, right. Because there was Mom's Little Helper or whatever.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So what? So there's drug testing now. That
yeah.
Makes
as far
sense.
As I know. Yeah.
Because they can sharpen your attention.
Yeah.
That's what
and
they
it's,
do.
I think, you know, it's just like any sport where you say, we want it to be a level playing field one way or the other.
Yeah.
We can either make it the Wild West and say, all bets are off, do whatever you want to do.
NFL.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, yeah. I mean,
nobody's ever checked anyone for steroids in the NFL.
Yeah, guys pop steroids all the time. They get suspended every year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And NFL was actually one of the first because it's so...
They're monsters, though. The guys are like 7 feet
They're finding
tall
ways around. Human growth hormone didn't really have an effective test until a couple years ago.
Okay.
So the science of cheating always stays ahead of the science of catching cheaters. That much I will tell
right.
you.
Right. That actually makes sense.
I'm a boxing guy, and there's always guys who are... What they usually get hit for is some sort of diuretic because they're trying to cut weight.
Okay.
So you have guys who, he was drinking... carburetor fluid, because it turns out that makes you lose a bunch of weight or whatever
crap is going on there. Weird thing that does that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And why do they want to be in wrestling? It's so that you could be stronger than the little
yes,
guy.
Yes, yeah. It's same way.
Same thing.
You're this fight. Let's say it's welterweight. You're Floyd Mayweather's, you're Manny Pacquiao's. It's contested at a maximum of 147 pounds.
Okay.
You weigh in 24 hours before the fight. You can weigh in at 147 pounds 24 hours before the fight. You can be whatever the hell weight you want when you actually walk into the ring. So if you can artificially cut down, barely make that weight, and then rehydrate up, and you'll walk in the ring.
5 pounds?
Guys now, 15 pounds overnight.
Overnight?
Easy. Yep. Easy. Walk into the ring, 162 pounds, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. It's what are you doing to your body to where you have 15 pounds you could rehydrate in one day?
That's so weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. And all I can think of is actresses.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Victoria's Secret angels are doing for their watermelon diet right before the
shoot.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
And then
yeah.
they're like, and then now I have to get at least the tiniest of all sandwiches.
Yeah.
So to have some sort of food to keep going. Uh-huh. It's Bamford Maria does this joke about how people are always like, actresses are so dumb. Look at them. And know in your heart that they're really hungry and very distracted.
Yeah,
right. Because they can't think.
Yeah.
They don't have any blood sugar.
Yeah, there's nothing left to make those neurons fire.
Yeah, so cut them some slack.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, they're always in a state of like pseudo misery.
Right, right. It just seems like a terrible.
Yeah.
Poor bastards.
Yeah. Well, anyway, they're doing fine.
They're doing fine. Hopefully they're saving up, they're buying land. That's what you're going to do is that boxers as well. If you're making these life choices where you're taking Adderall or you're doing these things.
Right.
Another great hint from the Cation Annals is buy land.
Get land.
Yeah.
Yeah. You really are. Just like your chess theory is stuck 1,000 years ago.
Sure.
Like your investment theory is still
very
1800s.
It's very Lex Luthor.
Get into Oklahoma and plant a flag.
That's
get some
it.
Land.
That's
yeah,
it. Eventually the gentrification will eventually come to you.
Yeah. That's a good point. At some point, they're going to build an Intelligentsia coffee near your land.
Right next to you. And you're going to be very sad because you got to know the people who have been living there for 100 years.
Yeah, that you started to chase out.
Yeah, and then I'm so sorry. You're going to have to leave because there's somebody with a haircut that really wants in.
All right. This is aimed at you, Silver Lake.
So I have successfully digressed us off chess for about 9 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What else is there to say, though? What do you like? What do you look for
in a game? Yeah, nowadays, for the last a long time. That's going to be the Star Wars call for episode 8. For the last the long time, people have been wondering. Guys have studied it so much now that you have huge volumes of tomes of games and opening theory and that type of stuff. Usually the first 20 to 25 moves of a game are almost by a script. You can say, they're playing the same moves that Fischer Spassky 1972 played or whatever.
Okay.
Because you've studied it to a point where, every move out has a counter move back.
Okay.
And so it's interesting that it as it moves on, it's longer and longer before you sort of get off book.
Okay,
And that's where,
And that's where the exciting times happen.
Yeah, who's going to be the first person to deviate from accepted theory because they think they've got some better move that we can play in this game.
Right, right. What if, someone who blows off those first 25 moves.
Yeah.
Is going to be that'd be huge.
And that's that's where your mental game comes in, because if you're playing a Bobby Fischer, and he does something 12 moves in that is not the accepted norm.
Right.
Now your opponent is thinking, well, did he do that because was that a mistake?
Right.
Does he know more than I know? You know, and, right. and now
does
you,
he have a new plan?
Does he have a new plan? Has he invented a new thing? Am I going to, you know, now how do I respond to that? And then it gets into, that's where that mental back and forth is.
Right.
You know?
Okay. That's, yeah, like I just want to start on the left side and just move yeah, so all my pieces.
Like, you just want a feng shui aboard that, like, that has a layout that is aesthetically pleasing to you.
Right. You know, all that clumping, that's not good. That's clutter.
Yeah.
That's clutter.
Well, and that used to be, it's been maybe 10 years that computers can actually beat the top guys.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. As the, you know, the Moore's theory, that whole notion that computing power doubles every 18 months, that's been since they invented microchips. It's like,
okay, there's a theory that
you have a 16 gig hard drive now, in 18 months from now, a 32 gig is going to be the same size, cost the same amount, kind of thing.
Okay.
So it gets faster and faster. But computers took a long time over what you'd have thought they would have been able to do to beat the top guys. They can now, but they couldn't until very recently.
Oh, interesting. But they can now?
They can now. And then
does anybody watching what they're doing?
What the computers are doing?
Yeah, what the computers
are doing. If you want to be a huge nerd, computer chess leagues where guys try to build the best program to play against other computers.
Oh.
So you can go through and watch all the games that just the computers are playing against each other.
Oh, wow.
And that's its own type of, you know.
Well, it's like a YouTube watching somebody else build Minecraft.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, you're watching somebody else play Halo.
And that's a huge thing in the, if anything I felt like has passed me by in the last 10 years, it's been the, like, profusion of non-participatory things like that. Like, let's watch Twitch and watch somebody else play this video game.
Yeah.
Or build a Minecraft thing or do a speed run through a game or, you know.
Computer on computer entertainment.
Yeah.
It's like, you're really not even entertaining anyone real here.
Right,
you're just
It's like the whole premise, that Hugh Jackman movie with robot boxing actually ended up being a really good movie, but it sounded like the dumbest idea because it was
I didn't even see it.
It was a really cool movie a couple years ago.
It was Rock'em Sock'em Robots,
it was essentially
Rock'em
Sock'em Robots. And the idea was, in the near future, as people have gotten turned off to the notion of humans bashing each other about the head, we'll watch robots do it. And I thought, well, there's no investment. Who cares if one machine beats another machine? But then it ended up being really, really cool.
Did they knock their block off?
Blocks were knocked off.
Blocks were knocked off?
Much like that. I don't know. Did they must have paid Rock'em Sock'em Robots at some point.
Well, I think it was based on Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Yeah.
And so they did initially, and then there was too much fun making.
Right, right.
It was like, well, what about Pirates of the Caribbean? That worked.
Yeah, there was the Haunted Mansion, the whatever.
The Haunted Mansion people like that.
If we have an intellectual property that people enjoy.
Right. Yeah. Is there a way that we could turn Operation into something?
It's like how we mentioned it earlier, and I didn't know if you knew that they made movies out of the Lord of the Rings Risk game. They ended up making some Lord of the Rings movies. I guess that game was so popular. I'm doing a joke. That was too dry.
It was too dry.
Does this guy not know that that was a... That's funny. Yeah.
That's interesting. Have you ever read one of Andy's favorite books? And I like it. It's Ian Banks is a little dense for me. So, but he is very dry and very funny. But he wrote a series of science fiction books, Ian M. Banks. I don't know if it's just under Ian Banks or Ian M. Banks.
Okay.
He writes under both. Guy just died. Wrote a book called The Player of Games.
Oh, yeah. All right.
And have you read that one?
I have not read it, but I have heard of it.
It is fascinating. It's a future world, you know, where the culture is a giant empire of planets and whatnot. And everybody's got enough and has enough, and there's no worries about anybody.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing, the most famous people in the world are the people who can play games.
Oh, yeah, right.
So
when there's no more need to, like, hunt and forage and all that, what's going to be the thing that elevates you above?
Yeah. And and so this guy who's the best game player in the galaxy or whatever, the culture wants to take over a new planet.
Okay.
And so there is politics. You can also play politics. There are many games.
It's a game in and of itself. Yeah,
the culture series is actually fascinating.
Uh-huh.
And so they annex new planets and new worlds, but they try to do it in the most peaceful way possible. And this planet has a game that they play on every level of their society, sort of like backgammon or dice or something. It's played in the barrios. It's played, and the person who wins the structured version of it becomes king for life.
Right.
And so they say to the player.
The player, we need you to.
To go do this. Right. And he's like, no, I'm busy. I'm going to go play chess or something.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, nope, this is one of the things about being a citizen.
We're not going to let you get out of this one.
Yeah, it's a political strong arm.
Yeah.
And so, and it becomes sort of, it reminded me of the Bobby Fischer.
Yeah.
Kind of a chess kind of thing.
I am sure that it has that because that's a similar, you know, you had the. What you forget about, or probably don't forget about the Fischer thing, is it's the very height of the Cold War. So you're talking about, you know, the United States, shady people taking Bobby Fischer aside and saying, listen, we need you to, you know, to stick really it to these Ruskies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we can't, we've lost to them on, you know, they got into space before us and we think they have more ICBMs than we do and that whole kind of thing.
Right.
You know, this is a chance for us to score a victory.
Yeah.
And now you've got the weight of your nation on your back in a way that you didn't want.
Right. And you were just like, I mean, I just want to beat the best chess player in the world.
And certainly in,
which has already driven him mad.
In Bobby right. Fischer's case, he was partially crazy anyway. And all that stuff happening did not help.
Did not help.
Yeah.
And whatever happened to him? Bobby Fischer?
So he won the title in 1972.
Okay.
Reykjavik, Iceland, the most famous, you know, huge, international
chess game
event,
in the world.
Biggest thing, the biggest, 10 times biggest prize money ever. You were supposed to defend, there would be 3 years before you would have to defend. All the candidates do a tournament again to defend. In 75, he had kind of disappeared. Refused to defend his title, was stripped of it, and then essentially literally disappeared. Popped up in Pasadena, popped up kind of around the world. Decades later. So he showed up in Yugoslavia in 92 to play his old opponent from 72 in another match.
Okay.
He claimed...
Like Andy Rooney needed money or something?
Yes. And he claimed it was the world championship because he felt like he was wrongly stripped, so he was going to, you know, defend his title, whatever. Because of U.S. sanctions against Yugoslavia, by him conducting business in Yugoslavia, he now had a warrant out for his arrest.
Oh, wow.
He steps on American soil. He's done. So he spent the next forever just sort of hopping around the world.
Oh, they didn't put him in jail.
Couch surfing. They didn't extradite him anywhere. He would spend all these non-extradition countries.
He just spent all of it just traveling.
He just couldn't come to America. Yeah, he spent it traveling or he would be involved with these women who were... chess groupies, the head of the Japanese Chess Federation took him in.
Huge fan.
And then he very much popped up on September 11th.
2001?
2001. That morning, right after, as towers were falling, he called into a Japanese radio station and sung the praises of the people who, this America deserved this. And
Holy hell.
Who run America have been, you know, have brought this on themselves and they're dirty snakes and whatever.
What?
He was full on crazy. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. He had lost all of his marbles. He'd been growing like increasingly anti-Semitic despite being Jewish himself.
Right.
For, you know, even when he was a, you know, popular
figure. Bob Dylan went through that too. And then he came back.
Had a little phase and then he came back.
Sure, he came back.
Yeah. Bobby did not come back.
Bobby did not.
He lost his shit.
Bobby Fischer.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. Where is he? Is he dead?
He died in. So finally, after all these legal problems, Iceland agreed to give him asylum because he had really put them on the map.
Okay.
Playing the championship in Reykjavik in 72. So they brought him over there and he spent his last few years there and died in, I want to say, 2008.
Okay.
Something like that.
Wow.
So died a raving lunatic, you know.
Right, right. Just drooling and,
I mean,
who knows what the hell he was doing.
Railing against whatever, which is you take someone who clearly is already, you know, has a lot of mental issues.
Right.
You apply this amazing amount of pressure on them and don't, you know, as long as they're. The thing about all these sports, these games, these people cheating, these people doing whatever, as long as they're competing at the highest level and people are making money off of it, who's going to be the one to say, stop?
No one does say.
No one does.
No one. Everyone's just
says,
like, just work around
hey,
it.
Hey, Lindsay Lohan, let's stop it down for a year or two, not make a movie
hey,
and
Mitch
get your
Hedberg,
head right. Yeah,
why don't you stop doing the road for a minute and deal with your heroin
addiction.
And deal
with your heroin addiction and then...
Nobody says that.
Nobody says that.
No.
Yeah.
Everybody says... No, you just, in 3 months, you can take some
He'll
time
He'll be fine.
Off.
In 3 months, once I finish featuring for Mitch, or whatever it is.
Or
you know,
whatever it is.
Because everyone is individually culpable, kind of to some degree.
Yeah, it's incredibly. It's,
yeah.
It's, and the most culpable, of course.
Yeah.
Mitch Hedberg.
Right. Well, right. Yes.
Grown
of course.
Up man.
And so, as is Bobby Fischer.
As was Bobby
Fischer.
And
clearly one of the great you know, talents of at this particular thing of all time.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it such a wrestle of separating out the person from the accomplishment.
Right.
You know, it's the Cosby thing. It's the whatever.
It's Woody Allen. It's, you know, all it's, of it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's all that stuff where I want to speak of Bobby Fischer poetically because of what happened on the board and because of what, you know, he meant to rising up American chess. And if there are 10,000 kids who got off the streets and played chess and that helped them from, you know, then that's all fine.
Yeah.
But you're a monster.
The guy's a disaster.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, TJ Chambers, that's an hour.
Oh my God. We did it.
We did it.
Yeah.
We full on talked about chess.
That was a speed
for
cast.
Most of it.
Yeah. 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 For a good chunk of it.
For a good chunk of it. So everybody, it's at TJ Chambers LA.
Uh-huh.
And that's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Everywhere you want to find your TJ Chambers.
There you go. Yeah. All your TJ Chambers needs
is at TJ
Chambers LA.
So do that. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah. Thanks. That was fun.
All right. And you know the rules out there, you guys. Take care of each other.
My hat, my hat, my hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh my God. Thank you. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?